I have long believed that any coach with a true passion for his or her core competency can learn to be a speaker capable of earning a significant auxiliary income from speaking and derivative product sales. And our next speaker is just the guy to help transform a successful coach into a successful platform speaker. He's a rare combination of experienced professional speaker with his own successful career under his belt and a powerful mentor who makes a deeply meaningful impact on the life of each person he works with. Our next speaker has been training speakers for more than 20 years and is widely recognized as one of the country's best mentors to successful speakers. He has helped hundreds of people become speakers and hundreds of speakers to become successful professionals. He's the creator of the Speaking Success System, and he's a frequent speaker and participant at the important speaker conventions throughout Europe, Australia, Canada, and in the United States. Please join me in giving a great super conference welcome to Bert Dubin.
Well, thank you. Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen. Well, thank you so much. This is Bert Dubin, and I'm delighted to be here, with you and share my insights on how to be a great speaker and how in being a great speaker to encourage people to like you better, to love you, to want to be with you, and certainly to want to use you for your coaching. The very beginning of being a great speaker is to remember, as in the words of Jerry Spence, remember that your words are your verbal fingerprints. And so what do you do with those words? You start by being credible. To be credible, you stand psychologically naked before your audience. The elements of credibility: resolute authenticity, no trickery, pure truth. These are your credibility tools. And I always say, stand tall and proud, walk like a matador. As Jerry Spence put it, the way you move is your autobiography in motion. When you speak, speak with emotion, with deep feeling. Don't just recite your words. Live your words. Be your words. Don't speak from your mouth. Don't speak from your vocal chamber. Speak from your heart. And one of the keys when you are using speaking to make your coaching more successful is to prove your points with stories. And let me give you an example of a story I've been using for over 20 years from the platform. It goes back to when I was eight years old, rather small boy. And I could always scrounge a nickel out of my mom to go out and get an ice cream cone on a hot summer's evening. Well, near where we lived in Bender, New Jersey at the time, there were four little ice cream parlors, as we called them there and then, and I tried them all out. I found one of them would take the ice cream cone, having made it for me, and invert it into a little bowl of Jimmy's, little chocolate sprinkles, and then turn it back up and hand it to me. Well, which one do you think that I got from then on? The one with the Jimmy's, the one with the little chocolate sprinkles. Now, what was the point of that? I learned through that experience at the age of eight to always give people a little something extra, a little something they didn't expect. I like to say, as a speaker, give people more than they expect, more than you need to, more than anyone in their right mind would. And when you speak, tell the audience, tell them how it is, how it was, make them see it, make them feel it, make them understand it. And again, in the words of Jerry Spence, focus on your feelings. Feel those feelings. Feel your passion for your ideas. And I'll tell you, you will make an impact on your audiences that no one would believe.
Well, Bert, you've just demonstrated to the audience the power of presentation very demonstratively. Now, many in the audience are probably saying, wow, he is gifted. So, Bert, I want to start with the issue of, are speakers born or can they be trained?
Definitely, a speaker can be trained. When I came into this business, I knew nothing about speaking. I just knew that I felt a call. I felt I just had to do it. And I learned the hard way that it was important to bring all of me to the platform, by which I mean not just my words, my background, my beliefs, my education, my experience, and in particular, my feelings, my spirit, whatever talents I might have, my values. This is what audiences want to get. They want to know you. And as a matter of fact, to go to another level, if I may, Dave, think of this, and I'm saying this now for the audience. You were born unique. You are one of a kind. You are the best you that there will ever be, and there will never be another you. And you need to remember when you're standing before people that indeed you are here on a one-way ticket. You've got your life to live, and you have your opportunity to leave this world a better place. Well, so if you are going to speak to help your coaching business, ask yourself what sort of people you want to address, what you want to say, what you see as your gift for the world. Let your subconscious mind guide you.
Well, Bert, I think that's a message that resonates, but I bet there's some in the audience that nevertheless have some trepidations about this whole thing about public speaking. Now, we know a lot in the audience have overcome those trepidations, but let's just deal to try to get everybody in the audience to the same place so that we can drill down on the techniques of good speaking. What are some of the common barriers that people have that they have to overcome to get ready to unleash their story on the world?
A very good question, Dave. The most common barrier, as I see it, is lack of belief in themselves. Lack of enough self-esteem, lack of sensing that they are here as a gift for their world, lack of recognizing that their uniqueness, lack of recognizing that the world will never be better because they're here unless they release that uniqueness, unless they share their wisdom, unless they share their insights, unless they share their perceived truth.
Wow, you've said so much there, Bert, and I think that really is great guidance for the people in the audience who might be feeling that trepidation. You've almost set it as a responsibility we have to share that uniqueness. And I think every coach has inherently in them that belief. So it's just a matter of transforming it to release out. And I know you have worked with so many people, Bert, to help them get over that initial trepidation. Before we talk about the attributes of a great speaker, if somebody in the audience is sitting there, okay, I'm ready to release, but I'm still feeling this incredible nervousness, etc., what are some of the ways they can start to get over that initial hurdle?
That's a very good question, Dave. I would begin with breathing. We're born with our first breath as we leave the womb. There's nothing more important than breathing. And one of the techniques that I learned to practice years ago was this particular breathing practice, to take a deep breath for a count of five, to hold that breath for a count of five, and then release it for a count of five. I'll tell you what this does. The deep breath gives your brain an oxygen bath. You know, the brain uses one-third of all the oxygen that the body brings in. And so the deep breathing gives your brain a real treat. It loves oxygen. It clears the head, literally. It relaxes your body, and it prepares you to feel just a little taller as you get ready to stand before that audience, sharing your insights.
So, Bert, have you been able to take people who have been nervous about releasing their wisdom out into the world and get them over this initial hurdle so you can then start working on polishing their speaking skills?
The answer has to be yes. This is what I do. In fact, interestingly, Dave, it's what I do worldwide. I've got clients I've never met in Europe, in South Africa, in Australia, in Canada, as of course all over the United States. And some of them, for whatever reason, never get to my live events for my clients. We do it all on the phone, and I've helped them go from novices to mastership by giving them specific guidance, and then I have them record whatever little programs they might do, little free talks here and there. And I listen to those talks, listen to their breathing pattern, listen to their pauses being so important. Pauses are the white space that allows the ideas to sink in. And indeed, I've helped them go from novice status to mastership.
Well, you're probably best known for the people that end up being the masters, the Chris Weidners of the world, who attribute much of their success to their training with you. So let's, for those in the audience who have conquered that initial concern and are starting to master the craft, let's dive down and share with the audience, Bert, some of the things that you think are most important to making a great presentation.
Thank you for the opportunity to share those thoughts. It begins with lighting a fire in your belly. A passion, Dave, for your chosen topic. A passion that just radiates out from you like an aura. This is what empowers you to illuminate others. That was illuminate, not eliminate. To illuminate others, to light a fire in their belly. And one of the ways in which I share with my clients to start developing is, first of all, to create a little 20-minute talk, just 20 minutes, and to give that talk free at service clubs in your community, places like Rotary, Kiwanis, Optimists, community organizations. It's amazing how eager they are when they realize that you'll speak free, and they think you're there for them. What they don't know is they're there for you, to allow you to practice. And once you're good, let's say, doing 20 minutes, then to develop an hour, because you already have some content under your belt, develop substance, whatever message you want to share, a token amount of entertainment, a little bit of laughter, a few stories. Oh, audiences love stories. And if possible, Dave, some participation. Now, that can become, for a coach seeking to model his or her business, your model speech. Now, with that under your belt, the speech, by the way, I'm going to digress a moment. The speech is to be the what-tos of your recommendations. And then with the what-tos delivered, then you create a short seminar, 2 or 3 hours perhaps, or a workshop, dealing with the how-tos, where you get into more depth. These are ideas that really work.
Now, Bert, you mentioned storytelling, and I'd like to drill down on that because I think you and I and many in the audience have seen that some of the speakers we can best relate to are just great storytellers. I think Jack Canfield, who I think is a great storyteller and has much of his success around that. How do you become a great storyteller?
Before I tell you that, did you know Jack was one of my students?
I didn't know that, Bert.
Yes, oh yes, Jack sat at my feet a long time ago.
Wow, well, you did good with that one, Bert, as you've done with so many other of the stars.
In fact, there's a little story that goes with that.
Well, let's hear that story.
I wasn't prepared to say this, but I'm thrilled to. Yes, Jack sat through a 4-day event of mine. We were both in Santa Monica, and Jack and I exchanged seminars. I went to his event, he went to mine, and we didn't charge each other any money. Well, I was so honored when a few years later, and Jack got the idea of the Chicken Soup for the Soul book, only one book, that's all he thought of, he called me, asked me to use some of the stories he heard me tell when he sat at my feet. Now, that is a true story.
Wow.
And since then, I must say, Jack continues to recommend me to other people. I see him every year or 6 months at the National Speakers Association events. We both are rather religious attendees at those events, and we remain very good friends. Now to your question. Repeat the question. I think I forgot it.
What is it that makes a Jack Canfield or anybody a great storyteller?
First of all, powers of observation. Watching the human condition from a dispassionate place, Dave. In other words, thinking of yourself like a little bird sitting on the chandelier, observing the scene, and witnessing all of the elements taking place in the scene. The attitudes of the people involved, even though you may not know them, you're watching them. Your willingness to speak from your heart. Your willingness to speak from a place of empathy, from a place of caring about the human condition. People want to know that you care. That is so important. In fact, I seem to remember something someone said, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So you watch what's going on in your life, the scenes that you are in, and every time you observe something worthy of repetition, worthy of being able to prove a point that you wish to make in your speech or your seminar, whatever, note it down. One of the ways that I teach my clients to do is to look back in their life at the turning points of their life, how they became who they are, how they became a coach, for example, and at the experiences they had from which they harvested lessons. When a person speaks and tells their perceived truth, and in particular their experiences from their life, they're saying something no one else can say because no one else lived their life. So I say to the people in our audience who honor us with their presence, look back on your life, on how you became you, on what changed you from time to time, and what you learned, what you discovered, and ultimately how you became a coach, why you are a coach, all of that.
Who are some other storytellers that you most admire that people could use as sort of a model of using storytelling to become a powerful presenter?
Well, one that quickly comes to my mind is the great Zig Ziglar. He started out selling pots and pans in Yahoo City, Mississippi, if I recall the story correctly. Yahoo City, I think.
Yahoo City. Zig was one of my mentors. I got that drilled into my mind. It's Yahoo.
Oh,
We live in the Yahoo world today, but it's...
Well, is that the truth? That was a faux pas. So, Zig is a great storyteller. And then someone who has left the plane, though many people who are listening to us here in the audience will recognize this, was Norman Vincent Peale. I heard Norman Vincent Peale gave what became one of the very last speeches he ever gave at an NSA convention back in the mid-1990s, about a year before he passed away. And he was then, get this, Dave, he was 95 years old. He was so entertaining, so mesmerizing. Virtually his entire presentation, his speech, was stories, each one of which proved a point.
I recently heard Art Linkletter similar age do virtually the same thing, both of which give me great hope that there's still hope for me if I can, as I age out here. But
come on.
So storytelling is obviously a powerful piece, but there are people that use other methods to enhance their presentation and speak with a very powerful voice. So what are some of the other key techniques that really can drive to make a memorable speech?
I'm glad you're asking me that question. Let's begin with what you do before you speak. Get plenty of sleep. Be absolutely refreshed. And when you prepare to go out on the platform and stand before your audience, be beautifully groomed. Dress just a little bit better than the people in your audience. And when you breathe, breathe from your belly. In fact, there's a little breathing exercise that anyone can do, and I'll just share it with you briefly now. You say the words below. Now, when you say that word below, think of your belly. In fact, think of your pelvic bone. Yes, way down there. Then say, from down below. And think of your voice as coming from the pelvis. And then say, this is from down below. This is from down below. And repeat this again and again before you go out on the platform. Thus, you are adding richness and resonance to your voice by using what I call the entire abdominal cavity. Of course, it's not a cavity. Use it as your vocal chamber. Breathe from your belly. And then, as I mentioned earlier, when you walk in like a matador. Think of how a matador walks, tall and proud, and think of yourself as a powerhouse presenter. The next point, and I have two more points to make on this, determine in front, even if it's your 50th or 500th program, that this one is going to be the best program you ever did. And as part of that, commit to making this speech, this talk, a happening. Design it as a vivid and memorable experience, a transformational watershed, a turning point for everyone in the audience. Remember, it's all about them. So let your audience experience a dazzling possibility of how great they are, their possibilities, not how great you are. You're just the message carrier.
That is such an important point, Bird, and one that every one of our speakers, in one way or another, over the last day and a half have been emphasizing, that it is about the client or the audience, not about oneself. And I think intuitively we all know that, but I think sometimes that little thing or that big thing called the ego can get in the way of that and forget that we're speaking for the audience's benefit, and they are the one who is using and expending their time to listen to us. And I know you're so powerful when you explain to your students and keep reaffirming that it's all about the audience, ultimately.
Absolutely. And speaking of that audience, when you are out there, I'm telling this to the audience, of course, when you are delivering your program, standing before the group, deliver your program to one person at a time. Now, here's how you do that. You pick out someone in the audience, or in a huge hall, pick out a quadrant of the hall, and if you can, look directly into someone's eyes, complete each sentence while your eyes are locked into the eyes of another person. Something miraculous happens. This one person becomes the surrogate for every other person in the room, and others know it. Then, having spoken a full sentence to one individual looking into their baby blues, pause. As I said earlier, the pause is the white space. And then say the next sentence to another person in the audience, a different part of the room. When you do this, you create an electrifying experience for everyone in the room. Now, there's more. I've got a few points here that can help make a program so much better. Share something new you've never shared before. Now, you may say, well, how can I possibly do that? Yes, you can. Your internet research the previous evening might reveal something that you never spoke about before because you didn't know it till then. Or the morning paper. When I'm traveling, I like to go downstairs to the hotel lobby at 6:30 or 7 in the morning and get the morning papers, whatever there may be, in that town and see what's going on in that city. If it's a local audience and there's a local sports team, I might say, using the vernacular, how about them Giants? Now, I know how to speak English. That was deliberate vernacular. Or talk about an interview you just did with some important person. Next point. When you speak, don't recite something you read in the book. deliver what you know in your blood and sinews, your bones and your gut, what you've lived for, what you've toiled for, what really means something to you, what you feel deep inside, what matters to you in your heart of hearts, what shouts at you from within that it must be shared, your passion, your purpose, your reason to be. When you do this, Dave, and I mean this for the entire audience, your audience gets an experience of you unavailable to them in any other way. They are moved. They are mesmerized if you really do it right. And what about your words? Speak about that which you've earned to speak about, earned the right to speak about. Issues, topics for which you feel ardent emotion, because you've got fires to light in the hearts of your audience members. And more about that, speak about that which you love, to which you have a powerful, consuming commitment. And I promise you, you will have given your audience an unforgettable experience.
Well, Bert, you are so walking the talk, as you're passionate about this subject. How long does it take to become the kind of speaker that can speak passionately about your favorite subject?
Interestingly, it takes next to no time. If the person can awaken to their uniqueness, to the fact that what they know is of value to the audience, if they can get a sense that they are here as a servant of the Creator of us all, I just said something very important, here as a servant of the Creator of us all. I'm reminded of something that many people in our audience couldn't possibly remember, but I do because I was old enough. The year was 1960, 47, 48 years ago, and we had a new president, John F. Kennedy. He gave his inaugural speech. I watched it on television. He closed that inaugural speech with these exact words, and these were his words: here on earth at least, God's work must truly be our own. So if a speaker thinks of himself or herself as a servant of the Creator of us all, they will add a magnetism and a depth to what they say that audiences can never forget.
So anybody who's struggling with speaking, I think you're advising them, Bert, really to kind of look to their heart as to what they're speaking about, because this should not be that challenging a mastery program if you're speaking from the heart.
You said that right. And speaking of speaking from the heart takes me back to an experience that I had when I was 20 or 21. There was at the time a brilliant speaker. I don't know that he's still around. He was an older man at the time. His name was Millard J. Bennett. Millard J. Bennett. I was living at the time at the Central YMCA, downtown Philadelphia, near William Penn, there on the top of City Hall. And Millard J. Bennett came into the lobby of the YMCA to talk with these young men. I was a young man living there. He said words in a little 15 or 20 minute speech that he gave us that I was never able to forget. They came right into my heart. These were his words: your voice is the instrument on which you play the symphony of your life. Wow, I was never able to forget those words. At that time, I was learning to be a salesman, and so I used my voice to what I did in selling. I never knew that I would value that information enormously when I became a speaker.
Well, Bert, you've made a powerful case for speaking from the heart. What have you experienced as some of the pulls that get people speaking on anything other than that? This seems so logical, intuitively makes sense.
I didn't quite understand the question, Dave. Please address the question to me again. I want to give you full value.
Well, this is so logical that one would speak from the heart, and if you're speaking from the heart, it would be easy. What are some of the reasons that people get diverted into other kinds of speaking rather than speaking from the heart?
Wrong motive. Yes, wrong motive. Attempts to manipulate. Attempts to control. Attempts to deny the audience or whoever they're with their autonomy. We must always respect the audience as being autonomous people who don't have to do what we may guide them to do. And if they choose to, we intend to be an instrument of service to help them understand what to do and how to do it. But we have no right to be Svengali and try to hold people under our control. I do not recommend that at all.
Wonderful point, and I think many in the audience have seen people who've tried to do that with them, hopefully not on this stage. Over the time of this conference, we've been very careful in who we've selected to come before the people, and there are speakers who are speaking like you, Bert, from their heart. Bert, you've watched this speaking industry for many, many years. You've coached so many people. I'd like to step back and talk a little about the future of the speaking business. Is this a business that's good for years to come?
Well, I'm glad you're asking that question, because something interesting is going on in the meeting market, as we in the speaking business call it, the meeting market. Currently, during this time of financial challenges for lots of people, lots of talk about recession and that sort of thing, actually, this year, more meetings are scheduled than for last year. In addition to that, more dollars are being invested in paying speakers. Now, how about that? For those in the audience who actually dream of being paid to speak, as I've been for many, many years, you see, corporations and associations, and they are the basic market for where the money is. That's where the budgets are for $5,000 or $10,000 or more for an hour. And lots of my clients are getting that kind of money. Well, these are the times when organizations want to keep their people fired up, want to give them the information, the insights, the strategies, the keys, the tools, the techniques, whether it involves more productivity, more sales, more self-esteem, ability to withstand stress, ability to communicate better, ability to communicate persuasively, all of the things which people need in order to be more effective for the organizations they work for, and with associations to be more effective in running their own companies or their own departments. So I have seen in the 25 years I've been a national speaker, I have seen good times and times not so good, and the worst times are, and they're not that bad, the more money is budgeted for programs, for meetings, for conferences, for conventions. It's a great time to be speaking.
Well, Bert, if I've absorbed the message that if I speak from my heart, I should be able to do this, that it's a good business to be in, and it obviously enhances one's overall credibility and visibility as a coach. What are some of the steps, besides hiring you, that members of the audience, well, I'm big on, you know, they might as well get it from the man who's made the stars, but if they wanted to just get started, what are some easy steps? You mentioned one before, but what are some other easy steps that they could put their foot in the water before getting ready to go with you? Although I'd recommend they just jump on with you.
Oh, you're much too kind, Dave. Let's begin with this. This is the starting point. Know your subject. Know it inside out, upside down, backward and forward. Study it tirelessly, endlessly, relentlessly. I've been in the speaking business a quarter of a century, and I continue to study this business hours and hours and hours every week. Make the study of your subject your other intimate other. Love it with a passion that knows no bounds and has no limits. Devote yourself to whatever it is you're talking about. Make yourself its best. dear. Dedicate your energy, your time, your resources, without limit and without reserve, to whatever your chosen discipline is. In fact, speaking plainly, have a love affair with your theme. Now that's where it starts. Next point, know the market you're speaking for. What people you want to stand before, what companies, which organizations, which associations, which groups, which industries are likely to appreciate you and your mastership. And this point, which I live every day, be a restless, hungry, greedy seeker of every crumb of data, knowledge, and wisdom that impacts those at every level of your market. Finally, answering that question, know your values. What does matter to you? Know your principles and never depart from adherence to those values and principles. Let your audience know that you live a principle-based life. Know what you stand for, what matters bone deep to you, where you've been, where you're going, why you do what you do. And when you do all of this, Dave, and I know I'm throwing a lot out of our audience in these few moments we have together, when you do all of this, you give the audience an experience of authenticity, and there's nothing that can equal that authenticity.
Well, Bert, speaking of authenticity, many of the people in the audience probably are flashing back to some of the great speakers they've heard, and I'd like to try a little word association, because you know the speaking business so well, and throw a couple names of people who I think all would recognize as great speakers, and if you'll take a point or two that stands out in your mind with regard to what made them so powerful a speaker. I think of somebody like Ronald Reagan, who was called the great communicator. What made Ronald Reagan a great speaker?
Well, I don't know if we have time for all of that, but I'll do what I can. First of all, I lived in California when Ronald Reagan was the governor of California. So as governor, I heard him give many speeches. Secondly, I remember him when he was an actor before he became governor, and then later, of course, president. He had deep belief in his principles. He absolutely lived those principles, and of course, remember, he was a leader of one of the political parties in the United States, and so everyone didn't necessarily agree with him, but they couldn't deny that he truly believed in his principles. So, for what it may be worth, he exemplified total belief in the principles and values for which he stood.
Once again, speaking from the heart.
You said it right.
Yeah. Stuart Emery, one of my favorite writers, once wrote a book that you don't have to rehearse to be yourself.
And, of course not.
Yeah. Let me give you another one. Martin Luther King.
Martin Luther King. How many times I have replayed that speech. I've got it recorded. That memorable, memorable speech. I have a dream. Well, he went beyond speaking from his heart. He spoke from his soul. He spoke from his essence. He spoke from his deepest belief, from his love for the human condition, his empathy for the human condition, his understanding of the challenges that disadvantaged people had at the time, and maybe some still do, and of his deepest, deepest yearning to make a difference in this world. And it came out from every pore of his body. You couldn't deny it.
We talked earlier about Zig Ziglar, who to me models about every element of how to make a great presentation. What are some of the things when you think of Zig beyond storytelling, we talked about that one, that stand out in your mind?
His humanity. I have a little Zig story that nobody else can tell. One of my clients some years ago, David Price is his name, real person, was at the time, this was about the year 2000, he was the president of the the National Speakers Association of Australia. And he and I were attending a convention, an NSA convention, and we went to the fine dining room in the hotel the evening before the convention began, and we had dinner. And at the next table was Zig and the Redhead, as he called his wife. And they were having a quiet meal together. In fact, we were not more than 8 or 10 feet from them. And of course, I'm a great respecter of everyone's privacy, and I was concentrating on talking to David, and my client, and letting Zig do what he would with his own wife, leaving him alone. Well, when they got up to leave, before we did, I invited Zig over to the table. He doesn't really know me as a person, but I wanted to invite him, to introduce him to David. And Zig spent a few moments talking to us warmly, caringly, just the Zig that was at that table, in that private room, actually, private dining room, was just as warm and kindly and cheering and good a human being as the Zig that you see on the stage. So I guess the word for Zig has to be the word I used earlier, authenticity.
Well, well said. I've spent a lot of time with Zig, and he's had an incredible impact on my own life. And authenticity is a good summary. Great storyteller. Abundant energy, I might add, also to that point. I hope as I age out that I will have the energy that he brings to the stage so dramatically. Well, we need to turn to our audience and specific questions that they have. And I think that their questions reflect that you're starting to really get your message across to them. Connie from Vernon, California, is a coach who's been doing a fair amount of speaking, and she writes that she believes she's speaking from the heart and soul, but the audience reaction just isn't that good. Thoughts? Where does Connie turn?
Tell her to call my phone number and get some professional guidance.
Well, you say that semi-kiddingly, but that's really a good point. I mean, this is a group of coaches, and all of us, when it comes to our own shortcomings, can benefit by having a professional take a look. So why go through the anguish of committing to speak and not getting the kind of audience reaction you do? Reach out to Bert and get some professional guidance with regard to it.
Here is what I do. This is what I really do. When I have I listen to a recording of a program that one of my clients, probably a new client, has done, and I don't feel like put enough heart into it, I have a conversation with that client over the phone, and I say something like this: what matters to you? And I listen for an answer. Then I would say, why does it matter to you? Why should it matter to you? And I might ask questions such as, what difference do you want to make? Why do you want to make that difference? What good is it going to do the world for you to make that difference? Why do you want to be a speaker? What impact on the world do you want to have? And I would continue going in depth, so to speak, on such questions to get to the core of that person's essence. Now, there we have a good phrase that just came to me. To get to the core of that person's essence. Because if we do not have a soul, and of course we all do, if we are not in contact with a soul, if we think all we need to do is recite words like words we read in a book, we are not going to touch hearts. We are not going to reach people where they live. We are not going to have an emotional impact. And if a person really can't allow emotion and feeling and depth into what they say, I will recommend they go into another line of work. They're not going to be a speaker.
Rosemary has the next question. Rosemary is an experienced coach, but she describes herself as just starting out on speaking. And her question, interesting, kind of almost ties to the Zig Ziglar point that we made, says, how does she get the energy at the end of a long day to give a speech at night?
Oh, now that's a very interesting question. If a person is going to have a day of total activity out there in the world, really busy dealing with the mundane issues that keep coming up, whether it's writing or consulting or coaching or whatever it may be, and be at a point of exhaustion in the early evening, they may not be at their best. So I would suggest something like this. If possible, don't create a busy day for yourself if you're going to speak in the evening. Now, if you must have a busy day and you're going to speak in the evening, I recommend a nap. Some people call them a power nap. Half an hour, whatever is available to you, an hour or two before you go on. Simply rest. If possible, and if you're in a place where you can do this, take a shower. Put on fresh clothing so you look at your best. And if you're going to have a dinner, if you're going to have a meal before speaking, make it a light meal. Nothing heavy and digestible. Emphasis on the vegetables and the brown rice rather than something hard to digest like beef. And of course, no alcohol. Be absolutely in total command of yourself when you're going to go out on the platform.
Sound advice. Our next questioner didn't give their name. They did say they're from Rhode Island, and probably didn't give their name because of what the essence of their question is. The essence of their question is, I've been told I have an unpleasant tone of voice. What hope is there for me to be able to become an excellent speaker?
It's very interesting that you're asking that, because I have listened over the years to speakers who did not at all have a nice voice, nowhere near as nice as your voice, Dave, or as mine. Some of them stuttered. Some of them had diseases. I forget the name of the disease, which caused them not to be in full command of their voice box, and not to be able to speak as well as we speak, and they have still been very, very good. I'm thinking of a speaker. I hope I'm remembering his name right. He's from the D.C. area. His name is Michael Aronin. I do hope I've said his name right. He was the president of the D.C. chapter, the Greater Washington area chapter, a few years ago. And he has some disease, I forgot what it is. And it's very difficult for him to speak even to stand before audiences. And he's a mesmerizing speaker because his words, his concepts, his thoughts, his insights have such value. They address such significant aspects of the human condition that people overlook his speech impediment, and they actually are trying to listen through it for the message that matters that he's sharing. And he is one of the finer speakers in the USA.
So it is something that one can overcome. There also are actually voice and tone coaches, correct?
Who can of course, I'm one of them.
And can work to hopefully improve that. So there is hope on one spectrum or the other with regard to that. Now, Crystal, who's from Wyoming, has a different end of the spectrum, and her question is, given a good speech, seems to be good audience reaction, but what guidance would you have about a powerful ending to the speech?
Well, that's a very good question. A powerful ending to the speech. Let me give you this point before I give you the theory of this. Whatever your final words are to be, have them memorized. That last sentence or two or three. When you finish those words, don't thank the audience. Simply stand there and put your hands at your side and stop talking. I've had audiences that have sat there almost in a state of shock, so to speak. Did he really finish? And 30 seconds later, the thunderous applause appears. So to end the speech, say something significant, say something memorable and meaningful as the one point that you want your audience to take away. And having said that, simply stop talking and stand there. Don't walk off the stage. stand there. They'll get the idea that you're through speaking. Not that you're through, but that you have finished this program, and you'll hear that wild applause.
Roger has the next question, and Roger's from Boston, Mass, and says that frequently when he speaks, he gets less than great introductions that kind of throw him off from giving his best speech. Words of wisdom, Bert, for getting a good introduction to your speech.
That's a good point. Begin by typing out word for word exactly what your introducer is to say, the exact words you want to kick off your program. And when you type them out, 14-point bold, 14-point font, bold, double-spaced, and where there is to be a pause, have several clicks of the, whatever it is at the bottom of the computer, I forgot the word, but indicate those pauses with white space. And ask your introducer to say exactly the word that you give him or her to say, and to turn it over to you. And the words you write for the introducer to say are to indicate the values you're about to share with the audience. Not a biography of all the things you've done and all the books you've written and all of that, but rather the values the audience is about to harvest. You are preparing them, that is, the introducer is preparing the audience to hear your words of wisdom. And that's what they are to do.
Next question is from Tracy, who's from Los Angeles, and she wanted your opinion in the area of self-improvement. What and how should humor be used in a speech?
Well, that's a very important question. This will be a subjective answer, my perceived truth, Dave. I've never been a good joke teller. I don't tell jokes. Just don't have that talent. Some people do. Your humor is to be organic, not something thrust into the program to get a laugh, but something that simply comes out of the program naturally. I'll give you an example of that. Before I became a speaker, I worked for major corporations for 20 years, Fortune 500 corporations, and I felt I was never recognized enough. And in my entire 20-year experience, I did get notes of commendation. I still have those notes of commendation, both of them. Now, that's a one-liner, whether you got it or not.
I got it, Bert.
Said just right in front of an audience with a pause before both of them, that shows the feeling, the loneliness, the emptiness that someone really didn't get what you had to offer. So that's an example of organic humor, true humor. I lived it, and I do still have those notes of commendation from many years ago.
Next is Arlene from, I think it's Aztec, New Mexico, it looks like. I've never been to Aztec, New Mexico, but she wonders about what your recommendations are in terms of using audiovisual props. Slides, pictures, whatever.
Very perceptive question. I have used AV props, and I have found the following. When you want to show a visual to prove a point, turn it on the big screen, let the audience see it, and then turn it off. You do not want to be using your PowerPoint or whatever as a crutch. You want attention on you and not on the screen. So use as many as you must, and having shown the visual, turn it off and get all eyes back on you. Recently in my work, I do not use visuals. I want to be the center of attention. I want to model the behavior that I want them to use, because these days I speak to speakers, and so I want to model behavior for speakers to use. That's my answer.
Well, Bert, I'm sure many in the audience, just looking at this pile of additional questions we have, would like to understand how they can access your wisdom on an ongoing basis. And first off, you do have, like so many of our speakers, an e-zine, which they can sign up right on your speaker page here. But tell us a little bit about what you try to convey in your e-zine.
In my e-zine, which I have now published 100 issues of, 8 years and 4 months, and I've never missed an issue around the second Tuesday of each month. And what I put in those e-zines are generic truth, observations of mine about the speaking business, and obviously about how to be better. Now, I've turned many of my issues into a blog, and a person who gets the first issue can see a link they can click on, and they'll see about 1 year or so of my past issues available, the wisdom that I'm happy to give away, thrilled to give away, because I'm really a giver. So I think with regard to the e-zine, just go to my website, sign up for it, and you also get a 7-part course on success in the business of speaking, all complimentary from me.
Now, some people have probably been inspired, Bert, to really launch and get a more intensive and personalized exposure. And on your speaker page, we have some of the other ways that they can do that. Why don't you share with the audience the alternative ways that they can get a more personalized interaction and coaching from you?
Of course. First of all, if someone were to go to my product section, they would see an array of products, all of which, get this, have a 1-year unconditional guarantee. Send it back in any condition at all after the year is up, or when the year is up, before 365 days go by, and I'll return the money if it really hasn't provided value. I don't want people to have stuff of mine that they don't get value from. And many people who can't afford to have me as their mentor, and I think of myself primarily as a mentor, get my information products. And I'll give you an example. I'll tell you about one, and then I'll tell you about my mentoring. I have something the name of the program is Presentation Magic, in which, with 3 CDs and a thick manual, I tell how to be a master presenter. And if someone, would you like me to give a URL to get the Presentation Magic program?
Well, they can click it right off the speaker's page, and that'll get them right over
Wonderful.
There.
Wonderful. All right, then I won't go into the details of that. My mentoring is rather unique, because when I act as a mentor, when a person joins my inner circle, I give them something nobody else in the speaking business does. A guarantee of success in the speaking business or money back. Now, other people market books, tapes, CDs, and DVDs, and they guarantee their product. They say, if you don't like it, I'll give you back your money. I guarantee success. So what I market for people who choose to join my inner circle is success in the speaking business or money back. And you may say, how can I possibly do that and not put myself at risk? Well, I ask of my clients just one thing, that they abide by the guidance that I give them and document to me that they have done so. And with that as my simple guarantee of success, the last time I had to give money back was 1995. My clients succeed if they do the work. Now, that's an important point. Speaking is not an easy business. It takes discipline, it takes personal character, and when a person has character and can discipline themselves and cause themselves to do the requisite work to make of themselves a master marketer, that's what comes first, being a good marketer, and then a master speaker, they go on to success. You mentioned Chris Widener. Chris is one of my star pupils. He was a pastor with 4 little kids when he came to me a few years ago. And today, Chris generates a 7-figure income from speaking and from products. Many of my clients generate high 6-figure incomes. And our listeners, our viewers, our people in the audience can do the same thing if they'll allow themselves to become a master. And I teach people how to do it.
Well, the good news here, Bert, is that this is an audience that is filled with people that do have a passion for helping people. They have a message to give out to the world. You've inspired us with a belief today that, in fact, if they will couple that with a coach who will help them through the process to master this business of speaking, that they too can become better known and experience even greater impact on this world. And we want to thank you for joining us here today.
It's my pleasure, and of course I thank the members of our audience. I thank every one of you for listening so carefully. I'm thrilled to have been of service to this point, and I'd be most eager to be of further service as you see fit.